One is a powerful number. One courageous leader can ignite an entire revolution. One well-chosen word can heal a broken relationship. One humble volunteer can transform a life. I'm Chuck Swindoll, and just after today's message, I need to share something very personal with you. So please stay with me to hear about that power of one.
When you forecast the future and roll the calendar forward about 50 years or so, how will future generations cast your legacy? What kind of fruit will blossom from your family tree? Well, it's hard to imagine what might be said when you're no longer around to hear it, but it's certainly hopeful our legacy will be one of integrity, commitment, and moral purity. Welcome to Insight for Living. During the next half hour, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll's final message in the four-part mini-series, Staying Pure in a World Gone Wild. Today, Chuck's specifically talking about creating a legacy of moral purity.
After David turned 50 years of age, after he has succeeded Saul as the king, after he has distinguished himself as not only a composer of many of the songs, but also as the national leader, and more importantly, a man of God, David was weakened. First, polygamy weakened David. Success weakened him. And I'll tell you third, indulgence weakened him. If polygamy weakened him, if success weakened him, I can assure you indulgence weakened him. First two verses, 2 Samuel 11. It happened in the spring, at the time when kings go out to battle. Read indulgence between the lines. David sent Joab, his servants, with him, and they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. Joab's in battle. David arises from his bed. He's indulging himself. That's where trouble comes. He steps out on what we would call his patio roof, which is a place where a king could get a little bit of quiet privacy. And walking around on that roof, according to verse 2, from the roof he saw a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful in appearance. At this moment, he loses all cognizance of everything else. Some soft-footed servant slips beside him, and David says, "Who is that? Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? She's married, David." Men understand other men at these points. I need to say something more here, and these are not my thoughts originally. These are the thoughts of Raymond Brown, once a teacher in Spurgeon College in London. He points out that both are culpable. When we read this terrible story, we instinctively think of the offense of David's sin. But this attractive woman cannot be entirely excused. Bathsheba was careless and foolish, lacking in the usual Hebrew modesty, or she certainly would not have washed in a place where she knew she could be overlooked. From her rooftop, she would often have looked out to the royal palace and must have known that she could be seen. It is not enough merely to avoid sin ourselves. The New Testament insists that Christians must ensure that they do not become a stumbling block to others. If David had gone to war, he would not have seen Bathsheba that evening. If she had thought seriously about her action, she would not have put temptation in his path. Pay attention, ladies. Pay attention, men. This is for all of us. There is a brief dialogue with a servant, followed by a knock on Bathsheba's door. David ignores the comment about her having a husband. He sends messengers, plural, and they took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her.
I don't want to read that. I can't stand that line. There's this secret, passionate embrace. There are these kisses, and there's this intimacy beside, behind closed doors. It's all followed by this sudden burst of ecstasy, and there is no love at all. It is all about sex. Just raw sex. She's gone. That's how it really was. Oh, that's awfully quick to give it to you like that, but that's it. Why wasn't it at that moment? And maybe it was when he sits again on the side of the bed. She's cleaned up and left. I'm the one that's fallen in this time of battle. You wonder if he didn't think that. He could write it of King Saul. Man. She leans against the wall in her home after the door is closed and must have thought, oh, what in the world have I done? We sometimes think so clearly after the fact, huh? When she had purified herself from her uncleanness, she returned to her house. What a perfect moment, if they didn't do it before, to have called out to God, oh, God, I have sinned. I cannot hide this. I am the king. I will not hide this from my people. I will openly declare it. I will acknowledge it. I will not do one more thing. My servants know what happened. None of them keeps their mouth shut. But he doesn't do anything. He hides it. Thomas Baird once wrote, where the barking of the watchdog is not heeded, the howl of the bloodhound will soon be heard. When the warnings of conscience are disregarded, then the accusations of conscience must be endured. At this point, hypocrisy kicks into gear. This man who knows better, this man who has given us such awesome words of praise, now shrinks to the size of a spiritual pygmy as he lives a lie. Because you see, the woman comes back and says to David, I'm pregnant. All right, you know the rest of the story. I'm not going to go any further on the story. I'm going to spend the rest of our time talking about a legacy. Few things destroy legacies like a moral fall. Moral falls have a way of bringing a compound fracture into a relationship and into a family. So, healing can come, recovery can occur, forgiveness is at all part of that. That's another journey we will take at another time, but for now, let's go back. Let's step back. I don't know where you find yourself today. By the grace of God, thankfully, I can speak on this, having never known another woman. Never. And I'm so grateful for God's grace protecting me in the midst of life. I don't know how I could preach this had I broken my wife's heart and fractured my family. But we won't even go there. I don't know where you are right now. You may be there. Surely in a group this large, someone is close, if not altogether there. And so, what can we do to protect ourselves is the question. What can we do to protect ourselves? There are two parts of this I want to address. One is, to keep from thinking we're safe, I have a couple of things to suggest. And second, to keep from falling into sin, I have a couple of things to suggest. Okay, here we go. To keep from thinking we're safe because we're Christians, or because we're married, or because we are mature, or because we are in a responsible position, or because we're trusted, all of those things are great. They offer no protection. They, in fact, tend to make us a little more unguarded. Those who are caught up in themselves, those whose image is wrapped up in their position, those who think more about reputation than character, or concern themselves more with image than reality. So let me say, first of all, number one, write it down. Acknowledge your weakness. Acknowledge you are weak. At any given unguarded moment, wham, you're a goner. Your sin nature is alive and well and ready. Like I read to Cynthia last week, we were reading on Cain. It is ready to pounce
It lies at the door, waiting to go. Realize at any moment of any day, you are at risk. Second, guard your leisure. Guard your leisure. Time on our hands is perilous, especially if we are in a period of mild depression, a little let down, a little disappointed in ourselves. We tend to play a little more with fire during times like that. Guard your leisure. The internet is a disaster getting ready to happen. That's why page 41, an entire page of your booklet, is given to the subject. Please, every one of you, please read every word on page 41. Maybe you have read and still can't get beyond, at least in your mind, connect with us at Insight for Living. We're set up to help you. Organizations such as Be Safe Online and Net Accountability could be of enormous benefit to you. There's even a ministry available that will help you in a process of recovery from this. Pure Restoration Workshops is an example. It's all here, and we save time now to, if you just will commit to reading every word of this. Our son Kurt is very involved in working with these people of Be Safe Online and Net Accountability, and the statistics are frightening. Not just in the world, but large number percentage in the church, somewhere around 50%, in pornographic images on the internet. The old days of sneaking out and getting to a peep show and hoping no one sees you, or finding a magazine rack where you know most of the folks you respect wouldn't be, and you steal away for a few moments or you take the magazine. Now it's all of that's out of the, all that risk is gone. You've got it all to yourself behind closed doors with the shades drawn. Guard your leisure. Guard your leisure. There's something to say for just being pretty busy. Just a whole lot of your time. And you know me, I'm one that really believes in the value of relaxation and time off, whatever, but it's funny, when you're engaged in your work and you got yourself double time at that point, hard to lust. At the same time, you're exhausted. So something to say for just hard work. Sometimes Cynthia and I'll drop in bed and I'll say to her, "Can you believe some people were bored today? Some were just, they just had time on their hands today." Can't imagine that. But even the busy can lust, of course. It's not a guarantee, but it is a safeguard. Guard your leisure. Acknowledge your weakness. You are not immune. You haven't any special powers. I don't know how many times I've worked with pastors who have fallen, who have said almost the same line. "I never thought it would be me. I never thought." That's part of the problem. Start by saying, "It could be me. I could be next." Cynthia got an email just yesterday from a longtime friend we've known from the 70s who said our pastor just went south. Another one. And I'm sure that man thought a few years ago, "Not me. I'm going to stand firm in this." Okay, here's the second side to keep from falling. First, remain accountable. Remain accountable. An ultra-private life is preparation for a fall. Remain accountable. Stay close to a few same-gender people in a small group. Meet frequently. Ask the hard questions. Speak the truth. Speak the truth. Look into those eyes. Accountability questions that have often been asked in groups like this: have you been with a woman anywhere this past week that might be seen as compromising? Have any of your financial dealings lacked integrity? Have you exposed yourself to any sexually explicit material? Have you spent adequate time in the study of the scriptures and prayer? Have you given proper priority time to your family? Have you fulfilled the mandates of your vocation? Have you just lied to me? And there's something about that last question knowing that it's coming. And you know, some do. A man I know led not only accountability groups, he wrote on accountability all the while he had women on the string. So this is not a guarantee. Final analysis, it's you and God. Final analysis, it's you when nobody's looking. And it works. Remain accountable till you die. Till you die. I loved it when I heard Warren Sanney with the Navigators when he was interviewing a missionary about 86, 87 years old. And Warren said to the missionary, tell me when you finally got victory over lust. And the old missionary said, well, Lord, it hasn't happened yet. So you don't outgrow it. Here's a second, and this is the harder of the two because it does take some concentration. I wish you would follow it by writing some things on your own. Rehearse the consequences before the fact. Just go in your mind, turn them over, and if you will, write them down. Don't rationalize. Don't ignore them. Rehearse them. Randy Alcorn has written a book on this, and before he did, in Leadership Magazine a number of years ago, he wrote Consequences of a Moral Tumble, which I clipped from my magazine and have carried it with me for years. I've read it. I've read from it. I have repeated this dozens of times. I will not read it all, but it does drive the point home. Randy Alcorn writes, whenever I feel particularly vulnerable to sexual temptation, I find it helpful to review what effects my actions could have. And he names him. Grieving the Lord who redeemed me, dragging his sacred name into the mud. Following in the footsteps of these people whose immorality forfeited their ministries and caused me to shudder. Name them. Inflicting untold hurt on Nancy, my best friend, loyal wife. Losing Nancy's respect and trust. Hurting my beloved daughters, Karina and Angie. Destroying my example and credibility with my children. If my blindness should continue or my wife be unable to forgive, perhaps losing my wife and my children forever. Causing shame to my family. Why isn't Daddy a pastor anymore? They would ask. Losing self-respect. Creating a form of guilt awfully hard to shake. Even though God would forgive me, would I ever forgive myself? Forming memories and flashbacks that could plague future intimacy with my partner. Wasting years of ministry training and experience for a long time, maybe permanently. Bringing great pleasure to Satan. Heaping judgment and endless difficulty on the person with whom I committed adultery. Possibly bearing the physical consequences of diseases like gonorrhea, syphilis, chlamydia, herpes, and AIDS. Perhaps infecting Nancy. Or in the case of AIDS, causing her death. Bringing shame and hurt to these fellow pastors and elders of mine, list every one of them. Invoking shame and lifelong embarrassment on myself. Let's bow our heads together. I'd like us to sit very still for just a few moments. All of us. Just sit very still. The sin of immorality, whatever may be the realm of immorality, is not unforgivable. Of course not. It is forgivable. But it has a uniqueness about it in that it carries with it such deep, painful, abiding roots of sorrow. And the slightest hint, our thoughts are triggered and we return. We're haunted by them. Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Believe it or not, I repeat that to myself not infrequently, even at this age that I am. I'm not above a fall. I know you care very much about your legacy. I know you love this theme. I know that with all sincerity, you're entering into it, and I commend you.
please, today. Today, as maybe never in your life before, ponder what you have heard. From this point on, David's life changed. It was never quite the same again. Did he write Psalms? Yes, of course. Was he forgiven? Absolutely. But there was a sword that never left his home. It was a heartache from which he was never free. An anguish that haunted him. So I speak to you today in hopes that it's enough to give you pause. Realize in the building of the legacy, this is of invaluable importance. Invaluable. Holy, holy, holy Lord God Almighty. Early in the morning our song shall rise to you. Merciful and mighty God. Help us at Insight for Living never to lower the standard. Give us, Father, the courage to speak with humility and grace, nevertheless, courage and strength to men and women alike, to teenagers and even children, exposed in our day to such much blows that weaken, or everything is now okay. Help us at this conference to come to terms with these things in our lives. Thank you for your great forgiveness. Thank you for hearing us when we call upon you. Thank you for partners who forgive the guilty partner. Thank you for the ability to go on. Thank you even more now for the reminders, lest we fall. In this very sacred and quiet moment, we recommit ourselves to moral purity. It is never too late to start doing what is right. And for some, today is the start. Bless them and strengthen them abundantly, that they might create from now till the end of their days a legacy of purity. In the name of Jesus, everyone said.
Creating a Legacy of Moral Purity. That's the title of today's message from Chuck Swindoll. It represents the fourth and final in the brief mini-series called Staying Pure in a World Gone Wild. And you can request either the CDs or the downloadable MP3 files by going online or giving us a call. And I'll give that contact information in just a moment. It's not uncommon for us to hear from listeners who have no place to turn in order to resolve confidential issues. Perhaps you've been struggling to maintain moral purity in the privacy of your life, and you continue to lose the battle. Well, Insight for Living has prepared a number of resources for you online, and we'd urge you to check it out and take advantage of the practical help available at insightworld.org. In a moment, we'll explain how you can receive the special publication prepared for you this month called Women in the Life of Jesus. With May coming to a conclusion, time is running out to request your copy, so be sure to jot down the information in just a moment. Well, you heard Chuck make a brief comment before today's broadcast started, and he's here now to elaborate on his reference to the power of one.
One of the things I've always respected about radio is that people listen one person at a time. It's sort of like a private space. Now, often we watch television as a family or with friends, or we'll go to the theater with a group of people, sometime with somebody else we enjoy to be with, and we always are sitting in a crowd. But usually when we're listening to radio or we're on our computers, we're doing that all alone. We're either in the car or in our house, or we're listening to our iPod with our earbuds. And as a result, you and I cultivate the feeling that we really have gotten to know each other. Our relationship through Insight for Living begins to feel downright personal, doesn't it? It's one voice to one heart. It's like a private dialogue, isn't it? Let me suggest that it's the same way with supporting Insight for Living financially. We don't get together in a group and decide on a general amount of money, hold hands, and write a group check. That never happens. Giving is a very personal thing. We do it one person at a time. Well, we're in the final stretch of our financial year. The goal before us, humanly speaking, feels ominous. Another word would be overwhelming. But it's not overwhelming when we join in this campaign together, one person at a time. Now, you might not think your gift makes any difference, but let me assure you, it does. Donations always come in one at a time, one loyal, generous listener at a time. And for that reason, I'm talking to you right now, just you. Are you with me? I need you to pick up your phone, or maybe you prefer to go online, and I need you to give whatever God places on your heart. Together, we can meet this goal, one person at a time.
And you can select from one of two ways to be in touch with Chuck Swindoll. If you're listening in the United States, you can call right now 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. By the way, when you give a donation today, you're invited to request the magazine-style publication called Women in the Life of Jesus. This is a time-limited offer. And if you respond today, we'll send two copies, one for you and one to give away. Ask for the exclusive publication from Insight for Living called Women in the Life of Jesus when you give. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll poses the question for couples, who says the honeymoon must end? Don't miss Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Creating a Legacy of Moral Purity, was copyrighted in 2004, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2005 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.